So thank you all for being here and for all of you that are attending online. To speak on Dogen's teachings is often a challenging task, especially when addressing the very nature of our practice together. We are very fortunate to have Norman, our guiding teacher, who I view as a true Dogen scholar, to help us decipher the meaning of these works. Our priests and training group, the five of us you've heard giving these talks, meets monthly with Norman, and we have been discussing numerous of Dogen's writings. The Power of the Okesa and Uji, or the Time Being, to name the two most recent teachings. Often we spend over an hour discussing just one paragraph. I have come to love Dogen's teachings and his laser-like focus in discussing the indescribable aspects of life, of practice, and of our being in the world. He has certainly deepened my practice and understanding. Today, I wear this okesa in honor of him and his heartfelt teachings, and to do my best to try to share my own understanding of the meaning of the Genjo Koan. So remember, the Genjo Koan was written for a lay student as a rather poetic instruction of what our practice is in being in the world. It appears as the very first chapter of the Shobo Genzo, followed by the Hanya Haramita, Dogen's writings on the Heart Sutra. So clearly this is of importance. For all Dogen's poetry and expansiveness, there is also a practical simplicity of his Genjo Koan teachings. He emphasizes Zen and Dharma as a guide to our personal effort and opening of ourselves to our deeper reality and our interconnectedness to everything and everyone around us in our Bodhisattva practice. He mirrors back to us our natural human limitations of delusion and attachment and aversion, not to be avoided, but as tools of awakening, as Dharma gates, as teachers. Before I even go back to Genjo Koan, I would like to share a writing of Dogen's from Zuimonki that I think will help us better understand what Dogen is telling us in Genjo Koan. Do not be in a hurry to understand the essential points and ancient example. If you practice following other practitioners, you will surely attain the way. It is like making a voyage. Even though you don't know how to steer your ship, if you leave everything to the skill of the sailors, whether you understand or not, you will reach the other shore. Only if you follow a good teacher and practice with fellow practitioners without harboring personal views, will you naturally become a person of the way. Students of the way, even if you think you have attained enlightenment, do not stop practicing. Do not think you have reached the pinnacle. The way is endless. In this passage, Dogen reminds us that the true realization of Dharma lies in our intimate practice together and our zazen, not just sutras and books, though in time the sutras do add to our understanding and our practice. When I started Zen years ago, I tried and tried to make sense of the sutras, thinking I could find realization of the Dharma there. But of course I could not. Just showing up, as Norman repeatedly tells us, and absorbing the practice and teaching of our fellow Sangha members and teachers, often nonverbal, do we slowly own our own practice. And over the many series of teachings of Norman's, often repeated, do we come to a deeper and deeper understanding of the Dharma. And yet, as we all know, the way is endless. I like to think this is what Dogen is saying in the heart of the Genjo Koan, though in a much deeper way. It is in this light that I will speak on the culminating three paragraphs of the Genjo Koan. I will occasionally intersperse earlier quotes of the Genjo Koan that support what is being said. And now, back to birds and fish. Now, if a bird or a fish tries to reach the end of its element before moving in it, this bird or fish will not find its way or its place. Kind of like trying to learn Zen without a deep Zazen and Sangha practice, or being fixated with attaining enlightenment when the heart teacher already tells us there's nothing to attain. This past week at our home in Muir Beach, I experienced the most incredible example of the bird flying completely in its element. Eating dinner, we often watch out the window for the return of the pelicans on their daily exploits. They fly low in small groups in the mornings, east to west, but return in large flocks, much higher in the sky, going west back to their home. Often I try to count, the number of these birds, and usually max out at about 80 at the largest flocks. But Saturday, something amazing happened. A flock rounded the northern hills above Little Beach and kept growing and growing and growing, led by one bird, with a wing bird shortly back behind him. But one grouping nonetheless that ended up, I estimate, to be over 350 of these enormous birds flying, filling the entire horizon over the headlands going back to the bay, fully in their bird element. It was breathtaking, and for a moment, all thought disappeared in the awe of bird nature, as if I was a bird, totally of their element, and found myself somewhat envious of their total bird nature. Dogen follows this admonition to practice in one's element with two of the most important sentences in Genjo Koan. When you find your place where you are, practice occurs, actualizing the fundamental point, the very title of Genjo Koan. And then for emphasis, Dogen repeats it again in the next line as, when you find your way at this moment, practice occurs, actualizing the fundamental point. For the place, the way, is neither large nor small, neither yours nor others. Close your eyes for a moment and let's let that seep in. When you find your place where you are, practice occurs. How beautiful to imagine that you can find your place right where you are, and that at this very moment, practice occurs. That is Genjo Koan. That is actualizing the fundamental point. That is the path to awakening. And then Dogen goes on. For the place, the way, is neither large nor small, neither yours nor others. That place is timeless, unknowable, and indescribable in the way our rational minds comprehend. The Buddha way is basically leaping clear of the many and the one. The myriad things come forth and experience themselves. And it is always there, right in the midst of our flawed selves and all the pain and suffering of the world around us. The way, the path, is not something out there separate from us to be achieved. It is exactly right where you are at this very moment and in all moments yet to come, and always was there in the first place. Fully engaging body and mind, you grasp things directly. Dharma is already correctly transmitted. You are immediately your original self. I remember being memorized by that simple line, when you find your place where you are, practice occurs, seeing it on a white folded card that our good Dharma brother Gordon had displayed on the shelf close to the altar at Deer Run Zendo, where Everyday Zen practiced for some years. And today it's with us on our altar. Gordon, his sister, gave it to me when I was helping her settle out his estate. So it, again, it resides on my altar at home. its meaning continues to draw me deeper into our practice as these years go by. Years ago in Dokusan with Norman, I remember talking to him about my feeling incomplete in my life, that there was much more I needed to do, to accomplish with my life, and perhaps sharing with him regret for what I had not yet accomplished. He asked me a question which stunned me. What if where you are is just where you need to be? I was aghast. I thought, no, he doesn't understand. He doesn't understand my world of, you know, finance and business was foreign to him, that I'm capable of doing many things, yet unfulfilled, yet money or success was no longer quite the drive it used to be. It didn't occur to me at that time, it was I who didn't understand, that I was creating suffering by my own delusions of what I thought I needed to accomplish or to be, and couldn't let go. Regrets. But practice and aging have seemed to have tempered these delusions. Now I feel I am quite happy with my wife and my Sangha practice and my Sangha family. I feel I am truly in my element, in my love of the Dharma and our Sangha, that I am slowly growing into these robes. I guess this proves we are all capable of change over time, like my new vegan self, though it was medically imposed. When you practice intimately and return to where you are, it will be clear that nothing at all has unchanging self. Dogen is really reminding us of the same thing Norman talked about in his introduction to this series, that living itself is a koan, that the whole point of Zen practice and the meaning of koan is this union of the absolute and relative, that one doesn't need to transcend or improve, but just to fully practice in the moment to make it real as it actually is. So now back to Dogen. The place, the way, has not carried over from the past, and it is not merely arising now. Accordingly, in the practice enlightenment of the Buddha way, meeting one thing is mastering it. Doing one practice is practicing completely. Like Dogen's instruction to the cook, whatever we are doing, we should practice it fully in this moment. Remember the earlier Genjo Koan teachings of birth and death? Birth is an expression complete in this moment. Death is an expression complete in this moment. My understanding of Dogen is everything we experience is an expression complete in this moment. Suffering is an expression complete in this moment. Delusion is an expression complete in this moment. Attachment is an expression complete in this moment. Aversion is an expression complete in this moment. This moment is complete in this moment. And everything is an opportunity for awakening in the very intimacy of this very moment. Dogen teaches us that Zazen is practice enlightenment, and Zazen will always be the core of Zen practice. But Dogen also teaches us that practice is everywhere, in all moments, not simply on the cushion, but every moment of our entire lives. Each moment arising and passing in time is a koan, an invitation to truth, and what I would call our own true nature. Norman described this far better than I in his first talk he gave in this series. In it, Norman said, life actually is, just as it is, the ultimate truth, perfect and beautiful. We don't need to be anything more than loving and kind. The mystery, the wonder of awakening, is inherent in just being alive. Being alive in a physical body is by nature attachment and aversion. You don't overcome that. Attachment is aversion is what happens to a being in time. We don't have to do anything with this or about it. So how do we practice with this? Our Zazen, of course, and our dedication to living a life of presence and compassion and love, inspired by our total interconnectedness with others and everything around us. And when we fail, as of course we will, we learn, we confess, and put more effort into our practice. We continuously practice. That myriad things come forth and experience themselves is awakening. We are never alone in this practice, thanks to our teachers and our Sangha, who are constantly showing us the correct transmission of the Dharma, bringing us insight and showing us the way. Just like the very first transmission or insight by Buddha's very first student, Kondinga, we cannot help but being moved by the words and actions of Norman, our teachers, and the Sangha. These insights, or aha moments, are the transmissions of the Dharma, as Norman explained to us not long ago. Natalie's 55 years of compassion practice, Martha's lifelong dedication of hospice work and deep practice, Chris Fortin's sincere practice in spreading and teaching the Dharma, Sue Moon's insightful writings, Jeff's work with the environment and his beautiful chants, Jean's incredible heartfelt talks and work with indigenous people, Jane and Laura and the Inos undying support for the functioning of our Sangha. All of you inspire me. Buddhas do not know they are Buddhas. However, they are actualized Buddhas who go on actualizing Buddhas. They and all of us are supporting each other's practice and helping each other to awaken. The way I see things, we all have a choice of how we live with these teachings. Nihilism, that nothing ultimately matters, or embracing the faith and patience that practice calls us to. Do we get discouraged that there is no one to save us or nothing to attain? Or do we settle in the beauty that awakening and enlightenment is right here in our imperfect world? Yes, we need to and want to feel and engage with the pain and suffering of the world, but not to attach to it or avert from it as best we can. We must come to have faith in the absolute perfection that also is there in this very moment. Our own human difficulties are often Dharma gates to open our hearts to others and ourselves and radically deepen our practice. Gratitude, we are not alone. Gratitude for the breath. Gratitude for the clarity of mind with the lessening of pain, the love shown to us or shared by us. I know for myself, experiencing significant heart issues clearly brought mortality into razor-sharp focus. What really is important in my life? How have I treated others? What would go unfulfilled? My wife and my practice were right there with me, and a surreal clarity of my unappreciated vulnerability of my life in this world. Dogen goes on, here is the place, here the way unfolds. The boundary of realization is not distinct, for the realization comes forth simultaneously with the mastery of Buddha Dharma. Do not suppose that what you realize becomes your knowledge and is grasped by your consciousness. I do feel that the way, the truth, the Buddha Dharma is beyond limit and our full comprehension. To label it or categorize it or to hold on to a satori or awakening experience is to limit it and to no more and is no more than another delusion of our need to grasp and attain and label things in our mind. It just is, and we know it when we experience it, and it becomes part of our being and our faith in our practice. Fully engaging body and mind, you grasp things directly. Your body and mind, as well as the body and minds of others, drop away. No trace or realization remains, and this no trace continues endlessly. Any one of us who has practiced Zazen for any period of time knows this intimately. Boundaries disappear. Time becomes fluid, but we clearly experience something deep and profound, and it changes us over time. Suzuki Roshi said, "You cannot be attached to your understanding. You should appreciate moment after moment what you are doing right now. To realize our position and find ourselves is the way." Back to Genjo Koan. Although actualized immediately, the inconceivable may not be distinctly apparent. Its appearance is beyond your knowledge. This is very similar to the earlier in the Genjo Koan when Dogen says, "You see and understand only what your eye of practice can reach." This is very true. We are human, and as human beings, we are limited how we see things and how we comprehend them. When I was quite young, I was totally convinced I truly knew many things. I embraced a more nihilistic world of chaos theory, as far as the universe concerned, and radical individualism, that the world was not a safe place, survival of the fittest, will and effort overcome all, that I could bifurcate my life into disparate roles of home and work. I don't think I had really that much respect for others. Obviously, I was a fool. I couldn't see the truth. I think many of us have come to Zen from experience some point of nihilism in our past. I am totally committed to our practice centered on our Zazen. But our practice off the Zafu is really where the majority of our practice must occur. Everything, every moment of our day is practice. For me, it is not so difficult practicing with our Sangha or like-minded practitioners. But we all know the world is much larger than this. We do not live in a bubble, but rather a reality so large, so interconnected and timeless that our consciousness cannot fully comprehend it. The rubber meets the road, so to speak, in the larger world of desperate views and beliefs, often contradictory to our own. I often struggle with how to practice there. I can't help but attach to my beliefs or my truth and have a very strong aversion to others who have very conservative beliefs or who distrust science or seemingly who will not accept even simple facts. I wish I could let that flow over me and move forward in compassion the way Natalie speaks of in working with her patients to open a path between us. They are Buddhas as well. I can only share I am conflicted, and I know from my difficulty that my practice is incomplete, and my heart and presence need to be more open. Like the boiling waters that our Sangha brother Gregory Wunderwill's translation of the beginning of Genjo Koan that Marianne spoke about last week, from the beginning, the way of the Buddha is located in the hot water where we try to jump out from abundance and scarcity, attachment and aversion. And yes, In attachment blossoms fall, and in aversion weeds spread. So now, on to the last and very important section of the Genja koan, which oddly enough is another koan within this koan. Here Dogen speaks of another Zen master named Bochi, fanning himself. The wind nature in this koan is a reference to Buddha nature, the idea that Buddha nature is like wind nature. It is ever present in time and all pervading in space. Now, to fully appreciate this koan, we need to put it in context that there was a great conflict of views at this time over the proper understanding of Buddha nature in Zen schools. Shohaku Akamura explains in his book, Realizing Genjo Koan, that Buddha nature was originally defined as the hidden, dormant potential to become a Tathagata. It is inherent in all living beings. A famous analogy uses the image of a diamond covered with rock and dirt. The diamond represents the Buddha nature that exists in all of us, and it is always with us, but is hidden beneath the rock and dirt of delusion. One must therefore first discover the diamond and then remove the dirt and polish the rock until the diamond and diamond with Buddhist practice. Only when a person becomes an enlightened Buddha is the true Buddha, the true beauty of the diamond revealed. Only when a person becomes an enlightened Buddha is the true beauty of the diamond revealed. The second school of thought around Buddha nature was the one we are most familiar with in our Mahayana teachings, emphasizing original enlightenment or ultimate reality. The idea of this teaching is that we must practice to become free of ignorance and return to our original enlightenment. Shohaku describes this as saying that in ultimate reality, all living beings are enlightened Buddhas from the beginning. But in phenomenal reality, we are deluded beings, and therefore we need to study and practice to restore our original enlightenment and become Buddhas. And if I understand correctly, this doesn't really just refer to living beings, but all concrete phenomena are manifestations of ultimate reality or Buddha nature. For me, this is the complete opposite of the original sin doctrine I was taught as a Catholic, or other Christian doctrines based on the idea that everyone is inherently a sinner, and that only by the intermediation of God are we saved from our miserable state. In Zen, however, we are originally good, enlightened beings, just blinded by our delusions and attachments and aversions. So this tension of what is Buddha nature is the same debate of the Northern and Southern schools, which we studied not long ago in the Platform Sutra, where the senior monk penned, "The Bodhi is the body is the Bodhi tree, the mind is like a bright mirror stand. At all times we must strive to polish it and must not let dust settle." And our sixth ancestor, Huineng, responded, "Bodhi originally has no tree. The bright mirror also has no stand. Fundamentally, there's not a single thing. Where could dust arise?" So now we read in the Genjo Koan. Zen Master Bochi of Mayu was fanning himself. A monk approached and said, "Master, the nature of wind is permanent and there is no place it does not reach. Why then do you fan yourself?" He is referring, of course, to the Zen teaching of Buddha nature always manifesting and never hidden. So then, why would Master Bochi need to fan himself in order to reveal the wind of Buddha nature? Or, in other words, why do we need to study and practice? This was the very question that led Dogen to China, searching for an answer. eventually leading him to his own teacher, Ruijing. Bochi replied to the student, "Although you understand that the nature of wind is permanent, you do not understand the meaning of its reaching everywhere." In other words, you do not fully understand the teaching of Buddha nature. "What is the meaning of its reaching everywhere?" asked the monk again. The master just kept fanning himself. The monk bowed deeply. "The actualization of the Buddha Dharma, the vital path of its correct transmission, is like this. If you say that you do not need to fan yourself because the nature of wind is permanent and you can have wind without fanning, you will understand neither permanence nor the nature of wind." This koan is typical of Master Bochi's teachings. All three of his koans in Dogen Shobo Genzo emphasize that Buddhism is not a philosophical system, but rather a mirror that reveals one's essential self. Our essential self is that because we are human and because we are Buddha nature, we must practice continuously to be in our own true nature as children of the Dharma. Our own relative human nature of delusion, attachment, and aversion is the very playground of our awakening. The commentaries speak about how Dogen's teacher, Ruijing, taught him that we cannot only look at practice and reality from the absolute perspective of Buddha nature, that since human beings have the ability to express both delusion and enlightenment, we must practice in order to manifest true awakening or Buddha nature. This realization was the basis of Dogen's teachings that practice and enlightenment are one, and his fundamental emphasis on zazen. In Fukan Zazengi, Dogen says, "How can we distinguish practice from enlightenment? The way is neither separate from where, from the way is never separated from where we are now. Shakyamuni Buddha and Bodhidharma practiced in this way. How can you people of today refrain from practice?" Okamura explains this emphasis on Dogen quite well. Practice for Dogen is an ongoing activity in which we continue to deepen and broaden our understanding, day by day, moment by moment. For Dogen, enlightenment is a vital life activity that we must nurture, just as we must nurture our bodies. To stay alive, we must digest food we have eaten every day and breathe moment by moment. In the same way, to manifest awakening, we must continually return to awakening day after day, moment by moment. Whenever we find that we have strayed from awakening, we must return to our practice. And now for the last and encouraging line of the Genjo Koan. The nature of wind is permanent. Because of that, the wind of the Buddha's house brings forth the gold of the great earth and makes fragrant the cream of the long river. Or to paraphrase this by translating some of the symbolism. The nature of the wind, Buddha nature, is permanent. Because of that, our ceaseless practice, fanning ourselves, makes the world we live in, the stream of our lives, as precious as gold and as rich and fragrant as cream. Sounds rather beautiful, doesn't it? I'd like to say one last thing about this teaching, directed more to the seniors in our Sangha, which, yes, is the majority of us. So, Dogen's admonition to practice right where we are is quite different in our advancing age, in the advancing age of most of our Sangha. As older beings, we deal differently with issues of mortality and suffering. Our drive for fame or fortune declines or disappears, and the short span left to our lives becomes more apparent with every medical situation that arises. We practice together as like-minded beings, struggling to get our arms around the great matter, which means something quite different at this time in our lives. Being more vulnerable, I believe our hearts are more likely to open. And how beautiful that we can really be exactly who we are, right where we are, beyond having to prove ourselves to anybody. How lucky we are to have found this Zen practice at this time in our lives, and to be able to share it so intimately with each other. So maybe we can relax a bit and enjoy being just who we are in this never-ending practice together. Just showing up today is our practice. Our practice is much more than we realize, just as each one of us is much more than we think we are. You are my practice, and I am yours. Together we practice in the midst of the great matter, boundless and timeless. What can be more real, more important than just this? May we all find our path to practice who we truly are in joyful effort. May we become the compassionate, loving beings our practice calls us to be. And may we truly bring harmony to everyone, free from hindrance and fear. Thank you for listening, and thank you for your practice. It's not easy giving talks on Dogen. So now we'll split into groups of three, and I believe we'll each have 3 minutes to discuss a couple things. Obviously, you can discuss what you'd like about what I said. The two most important are probably, again, this, which is, when you find your place right where you are, practice occurs. And then the other one, of course, is the issue of the fanning oneself continuously with practice. Or as I said, whatever else you'd like to talk about. So now, Jane, will you split us all into groups, and then we'll return. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you. It's hard to do that.